Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Mary Black, welcome.
Hiya Brendan, how are you doing?
Good, how's it going?
Grand, yeah, grand.
So Mary, you've chosen five pieces of music that mean something to you today. And I've done this now with enough people to know that there's some people, right, and music is important to them and it's part of the soundtrack of their life and all this. And then some people, music is like in them, it's a part of them and it's coursing through their veins, kind of. Are you that second kind of person, yeah?
I'm kind of not, I'm not obsessed. Do you know
really,
what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel my life has other things going on, and of course music is a huge part of what I do and who I am. But I like to have a variation of things, and I'm not obsessed about music.
Yeah, yeah.
But I must say I love music and I enjoy music.
Yeah.
But I think I have a healthy kind of interest in music, you know.
So as a child, it was a musical house. You'd be called upon. You'd have to have your turn, would you?
Oh, yeah. My father was a, you know, he had the MC hat on and we all had to do a party piece, whether we wanted to or not.
Yeah.
And so my mother and father both loved music. So it came on both sides, you know. My father came from Rathlin Island, from a little island off the north coast of Antrim, and he played fiddle and mandolin. My mother was an inner city Dublin girl and loved singing and Irish dancing and all sorts of dancing. She loved any kind of dancing. So she had music in her, you know.
Yeah.
And between them, they just... Daddy always had bought second-hand instruments and left them lying around the house, you know, that way.
Right, yeah.
So it was kind of... It was gently encouraged without... It was never... It was just something that we all loved doing, you know. And all of us can sing, the five of us. I have three brothers and a sister, you know.
And come here, does it happen then that if you grow up with that music in the house and you then do you hit teenage years and kind of rebel and find your own music?
Oh,
then?
Yeah. You're looking for something else. You know, Daddy would play kind of old ballads and Mammy would sing old songs of the 40s, you know, and it was all a bit boring and embarrassing really at times, you know, as a kid. And even then you got into your teens, even more embarrassing.
Yeah.
So, my eldest brother was a real collector of music, and there was a folk revival around the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, in Ireland, England and Scotland, all, you know, so he would tune in a lot to Scottish radio and BBC Four, and he'd get all other unusual songs, and he really had a little tape recorder that he'd record stuff down on a reel-to-reel tape. So there was that kind of interest that really perked my interest, and he'd get me up to sing songs because I had a better voice than him and his voice was breaking and stuff. He would have been his, you know, mid-teens. So I started kind of young. And so he introduced me to Fairport Convention, who were a kind of a folk band, folk rock, which I thought was really cool. And Sandy Denny was the singer in the band, and I just locked into that voice and that and Sandy Denny, her songs, and the influence of her on me as an artist is huge. You know the way you become, when you're young, you get obsessed with an album. She brought out an album in 1972 called Just Sandy. That was her solo album, and I knew every turn, every phrase, every guitar. If there was a guitar solo, I could sing
brain.
The guitar solo.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was with me and Sandy Denny. So I wanted to pick a song from her repertoire, from that album. And, you know, I recorded so many of her songs through the years, and she died very young. She was only in her early 30s when she died from a tragic accident. And so I never got to see her live. But you know something? Oftentimes in the early days, particularly when I was very nervous and very shy about getting up on stage, I often felt she was behind me, kind of willing me on. I felt
really,
her spirit.
Yeah.
So it's weird. I know
would
it sounds weird.
Would you be open
weird.
To that kind of thing?
Oh, I would, yeah. And I often felt that she was right on my shoulder there when I'd be singing her songs on stage. So it means a lot to me. And I picked one of the songs. I picked one that wasn't too dirgy or kind of for this hour of the morning. It's a song called Listen, Listen.
OK, let's have a listen. Explain to me then, why was that different to the folk and that and trad that you'd grown up with. Like, what was it about the folk clubs and that vibe and that revival that was, it was a bit more rock and roll, was it, than?
Well, there was a bit of everything going on, you know. There was, I mean, Horslips were out, at, you know, or on the way, and that would have been late 60s, early 70s. So there was a revival here too, and it wasn't just all... See, I came from the city. I didn't have a traditional background per se. I mean, my father played a few tunes, but it wasn't real purist traditional. Often people think that I did come from that background because I was in, well, I was in different bands and I sang a lot of folks, trad songs and folk songs because I loved them. But I always had a broad interest in music.
Yeah.
I never really tied myself down to any one area. You know, I kind of, an eclectic mix of songs. I started then after... after the Sandy Denny kind of like time, I suppose, I started to listen a lot into American singers, American female artists particularly. You know, I mean, obviously the big names, Joni Mitchell was I'm finding, hearing this voice and I'm thinking, wow, you know, Bonnie Raitt, Emmylou Harris. I kind of into, I love the country, you know, good country as well. Yeah. So there was a lot of influences there too. But the first time I heard Billie Holiday, now there was something different again.
And what was it?
Well, what it was with her, I could feel her pain through the music, through the songs. I could knew that, even though I hadn't read anything about her, I could feel the emotion. And emotion is very important in music and singing, particularly. I think you have to have, if I feel emotion, I'm actually emotional now because I was talking about the Palestinian thing and that's why I'm still a little bit emotional at the moment. But, you know, I just feel that if you don't feel the lyrics of a song, if you don't feel the emotion that you're singing about, then you're not going to get the song across to someone. And if the person feels it as well, then you've connected. That's the connection.
Yeah. And so you have to go there, do you, every time you're singing a song in a
way? Well, I don't... You know, it's funny, you don't try to go there, but sometimes you find yourself there. You mightn't be in exactly the same place you were another time. There might have been something, there might have been a row you had yesterday that kind of comes to mind, or whatever it is, that emotion that it brings up, or something that you remember about your mother who died 20 years ago. Whatever it is, it's an emotion. And you feel it, sometimes you don't even have to put a name on it. It's just that feeling. And it depends on what the song is, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, Billie Holiday taught me, I used to, when I was, I still was probably in my late teens at this stage, and I'd feel so sad that I'd watch myself in the mirror crying because it was actually a nice feeling, you know what I mean? I was, you know, watching the tears coming down my face, you know, thinking, this is feeling, this is emotion, this is why I'm, you know. And it's funny because obviously you don't do that all the time. That was only because I was young and it's kind of stupid. But, you know, I still remember that. And I remember what I learned from that and from her singing. So I picked one of her songs, which is called Good Morning Heartache, which I do occasionally on stage for a second or third encore when I want to send the people home.
Okay, here she is, Billie Holiday.
Just leave me alone. I've got those Monday blues, straight through Sunday blues. Good morning, heartache, here we go again. Good morning, heartache, you're the one who knew me when. Might as well get used to you hanging around. Good morning, heartache, sit down.
Billie Holiday there, Good Morning Heartache, and that's Mary Black's second song choice today. She probably took it to the extreme of the of living the pain of the music in
well,
her, didn't she?
Because she had a very tragic life, you know. I mean, all her life, her beginnings were very, very bad, and I mean, I know this now. After I've seen Lady Sings the Blues and reading books. But yeah, and she was, every man she ever was with used to just beat the living daylights out of her. And then she was on drugs and, she had a tragic life and she died in her 40s, you know.
Yeah. Come here, you said there about Sandy Denny and that if you were nervous or whatever, do you get nervous, yeah?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Still, yeah?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. When I get on a roll, when a tour starts, the opening couple of nights I would be nervous. And then I kind of feel, oh, no, it's OK. And the band are locked in. I have an amazing band who have been with me for a long time. So we're locked in together and it's like the family is back and we're there and we're doing what we do. And then it gets OK. But then if you're lining up to do, say, you know, the Olympia or Vic Street, I would be nervous because they're my home crowd and I know I have to be good or they wouldn't be pleased.
How does it manifest before you go on? What would you be?
Just, you know, I have to really try and breathe because I get a little bit breathless, you know, just with nerves. So I have to do kind of exercises.
Just calm the body down.
Calm the body
really,
a bit. It's not enough to make me not want to do it. Put it that way. I mean, it's a healthy kind of nervy thing, you know?
Yeah. You're not puking.
I go, something like that. Yeah, yeah. But sometimes I go racing onto the stage, like, let the dog see the rabbit. It takes me about two songs to calm down.
Listen, the next choice is an Elton John song, and there's an extraordinary story here. And it starts with you and your husband Joe at Elton John in the Three Arena recently, yeah?
Yeah. Just 2 months ago, I think it was around that time we went to see Elton John. And we had really nice seats. We were very close to him, which was amazing, you know. He's such an incredible artist. He just loves being on stage and he gave it everything. And as the night went on, I mean, we were always big fans of his and he started talking about this, one of his favourite albums, which was Captain Fantastic and his Brown Dirt Cowboy, which was released in the sort of around 1975, which was when me and Joe kind of started going out. And it was kind of the backdrop to our early courtship, if you like. And we knew every song on the album. And he said, and this is a song I never do on stage, but I'm going to do it tonight because it's, again, it's one of my favourite songs. And it was a song called Someone Saved My Life Tonight. And he's singing it and I'm very emotional. The tears are coming down my face this day, this night. And I look at Joe and he's the same. And what happened was, the story is that when we were one of our first trips off to the west of Ireland and Joe had a little Renault 4 car and we were leaving Castlebar after an afternoon session at the Humber Inn. We had loads of friends who played music in Castlebar and we were heading off to Achill. And so it was getting later and later and we were pulling into kind of Newport and we, as Joe said, a bridge jumped out in front of him. In actual fact, he took it to the turn too fast and we ended up hitting a low wall bridge and it was a bad bang. And luckily we weren't seriously hurt. The car was in bits. But the tape recorder kept playing and it was Someone Saved My Life Tonight. And it's playing really loud, you know, because all of a sudden after the crash it was so quiet and we were shocked.
Yeah.
And it was just all you could hear is a hiss from the engine and steam coming out and then Someone Saved My Life Tonight. And I just thought, wow, maybe somebody did, you know. So yeah. It meant a lot just because we could have been killed that night. Really, we should have went over that wall because we were going quite, well, too fast for the turn. And there was a bridge and a river. We would have ended up with the car upside down. I don't know how we didn't. And I think someone was looking out for us. So that's always been a favourite song of mine.
Yeah, that's like a scene from a film or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
The music keeps playing and everything else gone still. Okay, here's Elton John, Someone Saved My Life Tonight. Elton John there, Someone Saved My Life Tonight. That's Mary Black's third choice. I don't know that song at all. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic song.
Probably too young,
Brendan. Yeah. So just a quick sidebar. Joe and you were together since you were very young. You got married at 24. Mm. Did the priest who married you get lucky at your wedding, yeah?
Well, the priest who married me, I sang at his ordination. And he was a friend. He was from Castlebar. And he married us. And he... Later that he came to the wedding and he met a very good friend of mine at the wedding and he ended up marrying her and I sang at his wedding.
So So someone saved his life that night. Yeah,
exactly. And now they have five beautiful children and are very happy. So, yeah,
okay.
Love story again.
Yeah. Joe is your husband, also your manager. Is that ever tricky?
Not too much in that. Like, we weren't always in each other's pockets. I mean, travelling, I would be away touring and, you know, he'd be holding the fort at home. He didn't, and obviously he couldn't travel with me because one of us had to be there. We'd got three kids, and,
yeah.
You know, and I did have a limit of 3 weeks to be away. I don't think I'd ever be the type of artist who could tour for 6 months or a year and be away from home all that time. But, you know, I'd need
like
to get
even
back.
Kids aside, would you go mad that
I
long
think
on
that
the
would
road,
drive
yeah.
me around the twist. I find 3 weeks is lovely. The first week is exciting and it's great. Second week, you're settling in. And the third week, all you want to do is go home.
Right.
You know, for me anyway. Yeah. Well, of course, having kids did make it harder for me. And the only time I'd overstay 3 weeks would be if we went to Australia, New Zealand, and, you know, because it's a longer trip and you're away, you have to, you know, do it all when you're there kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. So was it hard then, like when the kids were young, being away?
Yeah, well,
like
it's
that,
funny,
yeah?
You're segueing into this next song, there's a story attached to when I was between 1983 and 86, I joined a band called The Dannon. And there were three great years. I got so much experience from working with those guys and being out on the road like that and touring America and all over Europe, etc. And maybe 2 years at that time, Dolores was in the band as well, Dolores Keane. And we were both, I mean, we were both young mothers. She had Joseph and I had Connor and Danny. And Danny was only a baby. And there's a story that she recalled and reminded me of it when we were away. We used to share a hotel room. And she said one night she could hear me crying and she said, Mary, what's wrong with you? She said, and I sat up in the bed and I said, I can't see Danny's face. I can see Connor's face and I can see Joe's face, but I can't see Danny's face. And I was really upset. He was only about 3 months old. Breaking my heart, leaving them. You know, that's the hard side of this life that I've had, was leaving them and not being there for. I missed Connor's communion because I had a tour of Australia that had been put in for a year and a half, and it was just unfortunate that the dates kind of. But Francis was there for me and he had his dad as well. But and then the same thing happened to her, and I had her son. I was there for his confirmation. But sometimes there's a downside to being a mother and having to work. I think for any job, there is guilt, you know, where you're away from your kids, you know, maybe you have a young baby and you have to put them into a creche. It's not easy, you know. There's guilt there, always guilt there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I
and like men too. Like, let us say, but probably in reality more so for the moment.
Ah, no, I wouldn't leave men out of it either, because men are much more involved in their kids now than they ever were, I think, you know. But getting back to Dolores, she used to stand up every night. I just love that woman. And she's such a powerful voice, and she's so much presence when she sings, and sings from her soul. And she used to sing this song every night, and it used to just... I just be rooted to the spot and the hairs in the back of my neck standing up. It was an Eric Bogle song called All the Fine Young Men. And it's an anti-war song he wrote about after the First World War, because it was such a horrific war and there was so much death and all that, that they thought there'd never be another war, like that war, that would be the final war to end wars. And of course, that didn't happen. And, you know, life has just been so cruel in recent times with the, you know, Ukraine and Russia problems and now this Gaza whole difficulty. And without getting into anything, it's just a beautiful song and the way Dolores sings it. And that's another one I chose.
And it is very, very resonant today. So this is Dolores Keane, All the Fine Young Men.
This war is over, there will be peace, and the peace will last forever. In Flanders Field, at Lone Pine and Beersheba, for king and country, for honor and duty.
Dolores Keane there, All the Fine Young Men. That's Mary Black's fourth choice. Listen, Mary, you're on a 40th anniversary tour.
There's the album there.
It's an album of duets.
Well, it's just, you know, I wanted to do something different to mark the 40 years since my first solo album in 1980.
It must feel like yesterday, does it?
It does. I remember so much. It just, time just races on and you just suddenly get a fright when you wake up and you hear it, you know, you hear, I remember recently I heard news of, you know, there was some, somebody got knocked down by a car, a woman, and she was in her late 60s. And I thought, she was in her late 60s. And I kind of went, what the?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You sort of forget sometimes that you're getting on yourself. And a thing like a 40th anniversary from my first solo album is one of those moments. But it's a duets album. And it's I brought together all the people that I've been so lucky to meet and sing with, you know. I mean, the list is here: Joan Baez, Emmylou Harris, Janice Ian, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Paul Brady, Seamus Begley, the lovely man he is and was, Finbar Fury, Marcia Howard, Imelda May, Dolores Keane, Liam Clancy, Mairéadan Trinity Donnell.
Yeah, that's some list. Yeah. Collaborators.
Yeah, it? Beautiful. Yeah. And all stories attached, which we won't go into now, but lovely people and great, great times, you know, shared, you know.
Yeah. Has it given you a good life?
Oh, yeah. I often wonder what I would have done had I not, you know. I mean, singing for me was where I was happiest. And when I was young, that's all I wanted to do. But it wasn't because I wanted to be famous or, you know, I just wanted to be in that place where there was a big session going on where I was singing and I was lose myself in songs. And that's what I've done for my life. You know, I mean, it's amazing to think that you do something you love like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can make a living out of it, which is another plus, you know.
Yeah, and you obviously didn't put the kids off it either.
No, they're grand. None of them have any major issues from being away from them. Although Danny often reminds me that I always miss his birthday because it's in March when he was a kid, because March is a big time for people travelling abroad, in America and all that. But I tried to make it up to him.
And listen, will you keep going indefinitely?
No. No, I feel, and that's the thing, I think I'm enjoying it even more now because I know it's not going to last forever. And I have a lovely feeling when I go out on stage, I feel as if I'm with my friends.
Yeah.
And we're getting ready to kind of maybe say goodbye at some stage. Really, this isn't farewell, but I think it's definitely coming down the track. It's time.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's important to know when it's
time,
isn't it?
Oh,
yeah. Okay, last song is a Van Morrison song, just quickly, and we'll go out on this. It's Carrying a Torch.
Yeah, Van, what can you say about Van Morrison? Amazing songwriter. I've been a huge fan all my life.
Yeah. Do you know him? Is he cranky?
I did. And I've met him a few times. I sang with him on the Chieftains album with Van Morrison, and I was there and he was with me in the studio, just me and him, and we sang. And he was lovely. He knew all about my family, my brothers in America and all this. And I was, wow. But we've met a few times recently. I was in Santiago de Compostela and on holidays, and I saw the poster and it was right kind of in between two of the COVID breakouts. So there was still, you know, masks and everything. And I thought, oh, it'd be great to go to that. He was in Coruña, which was only a 45-minute drive. So up we went. And he said, if you want to come in and say hello, because I asked to be put on this guest list. So he said, oh, tell her to come in and say hello. So I went in and had a chat with him. Really engraved. Looks fantastic. He's lost loads of weight. He was wearing a beautiful linen blue suit, his little straw hat. And we had a great old chat. And then I did a festival there recently with and he was on after me. So we had a lovely kind of...
He's
a
cool old dude,
he's
very
cool.
Fairness,
very
say
cool.
What, you
what, a, what a writer. And I mean, for somebody who has the reputation of being cranky and probably a little bit unsociable, like, he can write love songs. No other.
And look, it's allowed to be cranky, Okay, so the Duets album of collaborations from down the years is coming out next week. And then the 40th anniversary tour resumes next Friday in the INEC in Killarney. And people can go to maryblack.net to get tickets and they can buy the album there as well. Mary Black, thank you so much. And we'll leave you now with Van Morrison, Carrying a Torch.